much change. The rhetoric they speak is all the same. The men behind the curtain and the illusion they create pull the puppet strings and steal our fate. Watch yourself around me. I'm trying to live free. Push too far, we will strike. Like a snake coiled up in the night. Watch yourself around me. I'm trying to live free. Push too far, we will strike. Where the power structure lies, fight amongst ourselves as freedom dies. The only hope for humankind lies in solidarity. The strength in our numbers sets us free. Watch yourself around me. I'm trying to live free. Push too far, we will strike.
Good evening. It's good to have you back here on the TNT radio show on the My View Matters radio network. I am your host, Dale the Truth. And we thank you all for joining us, patriots and jackbooted thugs alike. We'll get right started on it tonight. Today is Thursday, February the 6th, 2014. And as you want to call into the show, if you're already on the line, the people who are listening in the queue, you can just press the number 1 if you'd like to get on the air. Or if you'd like to just listen, that's fine. But for those of you not on the line yet, you can call us at 858-683-1326. 858-683-1326. So we will start out with this week in history. Starting back in 1782 this week, we have the banning of paper money by South Carolina. 1782 this week. And just a few years after that, 1789 this week, we had the first presidential election. They didn't have them in November back then. They used to be in late winter, early spring, whatever you want to call it, in February. And it was the very first presidential election of these United States of America in 1789. Now moving forward, 1911. Yesterday in the year 1911, we had the birth of Ronald Wilson Reagan, the 40th president of the United States. We go from the first presidential election in 1789 to the birth this week of Ronald Reagan in 1911. And I think you guys have heard me talk on the airwaves about how I feel about Ronald Reagan. He is, in my opinion, the best president of my lifetime, and I think he is probably top four or five presidents of all time if we made those cases, arguably. And we've talked about before how there have only been two presidents who publicly would come out and speak against the New World Order while they were in office, and those were Ronald Wilson Reagan and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and they both were shot. We know that obviously it wasn't fatal when the shooting of Hinckley of Ronald Reagan in 1981, but we do know that he spoke out against the New World Order as well as John Fitzgerald Kennedy did. Now, fast-forwarding, mentioning U.S. presidents, this week in 1972, that's from the category of what your government indoctrination camps didn't want to talk to you about, but this week in 1972, hard to believe it's been 42 years ago, President Richard Milhouse Nixon issued executive order number 11647. If you try to find the actual text of this executive order, good luck, because there's only excerpts thereof, and those are what we must rely on. And the executive order signed this week in 1972 by Richard Milhouse Nixon went as follows. There is hereby established a federal regional council for each of the 10 standard federal regions. Each council shall be composed of the directors of the regional offices of the Department of Labor, Health, Education and Welfare, and Housing and Urban Development, Transportation, and of the regional offices of Economic Opportunity, the EPA, and the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration. The president shall designate one member of each such council as chairman of that council, and such chairman shall serve at the pleasure of the president. Representatives of the Office of Management and Budget may participate in any deliberations of the council. Now, the regions mentioned are the ones created under the Government Reorganization Act of 1969. Now, this sounds like a bunch of Latin that you have not heard about. Basically, it is becoming more and more common to see this executive order. Go look it up, executive order 11647. But it is becoming more common to see this as the, I guess this is the citation, or this as the crux of the shadow government that was to begin. The shadow government that is unconstitutional, this is the catalyst for it. It's trying to assert a state and local government authority. And again, this is signed by President Richard Milhouse Nixon, 42 years ago this week. If you want to get more into this shadowy executive order, you had a State of the Union the previous year in 1971 where Nixon had said, the further away government is from people, the stronger government becomes and the weaker people become. At that time, he was saying that he rejected the idea that the government of Washington, D.C. was inevitably more wise, more honest, more efficient than government at the local or state level, and we would have to be in agreement with them on that. At that time, he was saying, let us give the people of America a chance to decide for themselves those questions that so greatly affect their lives. But again, fast forward 1 year later, and again, the media was not what it is today. And when I say that, I mean it wasn't as far-reaching. There wasn't as much news that got out. So fast forward a year later, and he was ready for this landslide re-election to the presidency of the United States. And as the nation's press and TV were more preoccupied, they were going on with the red herring, if you will, of Nixon's journey to China. The president signed this executive order, February 10th, 1972, which then appeared in the Federal Register on February 12th, 1972. And there was virtually no comment in the national press on this action. Now, I'm being a little facetious when I say that they didn't know about it, because they did know about it, and they didn't want to report on it. This is the same kind of absentee, shadowy, yellow dog journalism that kind of got us where we are today with the dinosaur media, where they don't want to cover things like the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, or the rest of the globalist activity. But by signing this executive order, right before the president left for communist China, by signing this executive order, it declared that these regions, and they go each of the region, we are, example, in region number 4, Atlanta is the quote-unquote shadow capital for regional 4, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, the Carolinas, and Tennessee. And these regions were all divided up, and lines can be drawn for these federal regions, 10 lines, and it's a flagrant violation of the U.S. Constitution, of course. We know Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution says that the U.S. shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government. A Republican form of government is defined in Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary as one in which the sovereign power resides in a certain body of the people, the electorate, and is exercised by representatives elected by and responsible to them. But under the federal regional councils proclaimed by Nixon, government in these 10 federal regions would be administered by federally appointed bureaucrats, accountable to, you guessed it, only Washington, D.C. Thus, Nixon's actions are a clear violation of the U.S. Constitution, according to Article 4, Section 4. How about Article 4, Section 3, which stipulated that new states may only be admitted to the Union with the consent of the legislature of the states, that no new state would be erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, or no state would be formed by the conjunction of two other states. All this had to get consent of the legislators of the states, as well as Congress. Kind of the same way that we would have to pass a constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution, it would have to go through all the legislators. So what was behind this ominous consolidation of federal power over the states and the citizens? What is the ultimate purpose? And look how far it has progressed today. I mean, look how it would affect you and your pocketbook and your future liberty. I think it all can be summarized if you go back even before 71 and 72. Now, keep in mind, we just talked about what Nixon was doing in 71 and 72. If you go back to the Dan Smoot Report back in 1965, lest you all think that we just are Johnny's come lately to this thing, in the Dan Smoot Report of 1965, February 1st, it stated, advocates of governmental planning have visions of a new kind of America. They would transform our union of sovereign states into a regionally planned, monolithically unified nation divided into a score of metropolitan areas which sprawl across state boundary lines. So our state lines mean nothing to them. And if you go to the newsletter Countdown in March of 73, Virginia Wilson, the editor and publisher, said, to understand regional government, it is necessary to know what metro government, does that sound familiar? They were calling it metro government at the time, involves, because metro and regional government are the same. It's the government of an area or a region by a central body of appointed officials who have unlimited, unconstitutional power. And finally, Gary Allen, in an article that appeared in the 1973 January issue of American Opinion, the precursor to the New American magazine, Mr. Gary Allen defined this troubling ideology of metropolitan government as the governing of an area or region by a central body of quote-unquote experts, planners who are usually appointed and vested with great powers and not accountable to the people. So, again, we're dealing with people control via these executive orders. We're dealing about a future-controlled government by the executive and federal Nazis. And it's just weird if you go back and study it, because back in 1969, President Nixon had a statement that would originally establish 8 federal regions, but that was increased to 10 in May of 1969, and Nixon mentioned the regional council concept, and he declared, such councils will make it possible for the federal government to speak consistently and with a single voice in its dealings with states and localities, with private organizations, and with the public. And see, the single voice is the voice of the president, whose power has been pyramided and concentrated by these executive orders. And they're only made possible by relinquishing all the prerogatives within Congress. So again, just to kind of reboot here, we're talking about the executive order number 11647 signed into law by the president Richard Milhouse Nixon 42 years ago this week, which basically divided the U.S. government into 10 federal regions. And as we said, if you're already on the airwaves here with us and you're listening on the phone and you want to call in, you want to talk to us, by all means, just press the 1 digit and we will get you right in on the airwaves. And I believe our good friend Paul Hollier from Stop It is doing that just now. Paul, are you with us?
Good evening.
How are you, Paul?
I love TNT.
We love you too, Paul.
Dale, you're on federal issues right now, and I got a couple of issues here, both federal and national. I've actually got one local issue that kind of hammer home the point that you're making about the overreach of government and how they become all intrusive into people's lives. There's been a story that is becoming widely available this week about a situation in North Dakota where a farmer was arrested as a direct result of domestic drone usage. And the thing that, while the guy did some things he probably shouldn't have done, he took somebody else's cows, that's not the thing that's most interesting. The thing that's most interesting is that the local police were able to contact a federal agency and participate in a program that is referred to as Lonadrone. And this drone aircraft, according to all the accounts that I've seen on the net, hovered above this guy's property for quite an extended period of time. And I'm sure in the process they were gathering the evidence that they needed to conduct some type of raid, which they ultimately did.
Sure.
And the guy got sentenced this week. Now, any of your listeners who doubt that our government is not doing things for our benefit should realize that this drone surveillance didn't happen in 2014. It happened in 2011. At the same time, our government was denying that drones were being used to conduct surveillance on American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they were denying it in 2011.
Now we have
evidence of a guy being convicted of that. So,
I got a couple stories later that go down the same pipe, Paul. That I guess you called it Lona drone. So we kind of gone from Rent-A-Cop to Lona drone. And like you said, it doesn't matter that this guy was a thief of cattle or what have you. Just the fact that they came down and you look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's a predator drone, and it's coming to find you because you wouldn't give your neighbor his cows back just because they wandered onto your property, I guess. I'm not defending the guy. But when a drone, predator drone, is the arresting officer, and he's the first American that we know of to be sent to a cage due to this. It's like you said, in June of 2011,
Forbes
reported. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is the one that we know of. It's hard to say.
It's been 3 years.
Our government
has
acknowledged the use of secret courts for all sorts of stuff. It's hard to say how many people have actually been apprehended by the use of the
drone. Well, they claim that it resulted in armed standoff between him, this is Rodney Brossard, or Brossard, and his three sons and a SWAT team, and it ended, of course, only after his family was located by the Predator drone. You know where they borrowed the Predator drone, Paul? From Customs and Border Patrol.
Oh, yeah. You got to use those drones over the Canadian border, because those Canadians, they're a wily bunch. You never know.
First hockey and curly. Now this.
Now, what I want to know is, and to put this subject kind of sort of at rest, is when did cow thievery become a federal offense?
Well, it's obvious that he was a terrorist. I mean, if he's doing this to cattle, he could come blow up a building. I mean, it's amazing.
Well,
you talk about border sprawl. How can they find this American citizen, but yet they can't catch illegal aliens?
Yeah, that's a good question. And when you get a good answer to that, let everybody here on there.
Oh, we know the answer. They don't want to get silly.
Let them know.
Yeah,
exactly.
They don't want to get silly.
Well, on a good news note, Dale, there was another story that caught my eye. This was a story that came out of, I think it was out of St. Louis this week. A local person was arrested by the local police for flashing his lights to warn of a speed trap up ahead. Well, the local police thugs, just didn't care much for that. So they arrested the guy, threatened to fine him $1,000 and provide some prison time for him upon conviction.
After
the guy decided that he was going to fight it on constitutional grounds, the local police decided to drop it, but he did not, and he took the case into federal court.
Well,
federal
the
court
top
judge
of
all ruled,
of his crime. What were they charging him with?
Well, the local charges were all kinds of stuff that were just nonsense. They dropped them. They dropped them because once their counsel looked into this, their counsel advised them that, you know, maybe we better not proceed with this case. Well, interestingly enough, this individual got the ACLU involved, and so they took it into federal court and ultimately got a ruling where the federal judge said, hey, look, that is no different than you and I standing on a street corner talking about the speed trap up the road.
Yep.
That's no different than that. And so they said that was a violation of Americans' free speech rights, and they rendered a verdict. The judge rendered a verdict in favor of the plaintiff. So that actually was a nice victory for the little guy against the jackbooted thugs. And the best part about that, from my point of view, is that because it was a federal judgment, it has applicability everywhere in these United States.
That's the precedent. So, I guess the question, Paul, we go back to the beginning of the story, though. I mean, we're talking about the situation where the guy used his lights to kind of alert an oncoming passenger car that then this police. Where was this at? What state was this in, Paul?
Well, I'm sorry. I had trouble hearing you.
I said, what state was this in?
I think it was in Missouri, and I believe the judge was a federal judge in St. Louis.
But my question whenever they do this, Paul, is if this police officer is up there ahead, and obviously the one car is past the police officer, he's trying to alert another, what is the police officer claiming that he's doing there? What is the police officer's goal by sitting in his spot?
The only thing that seems apparent to me is simply to keep the sheeple in line.
Well, that's my point, because they'll claim they're there to keep speeds down or protect you from other speeding cars. So we all know that if someone alerts us that there's a cop up ahead, we're going to all of a sudden become a good sheep. We're going to all of a sudden drive straighter and drive slower. So if the cop was up there and his goal is to control traffic, remember there's supposedly these traffic stops that they do, and he's supposedly out there to keep people from speeding, then didn't this other guy help the cop out by flashing his lights and alerting the oncoming car to drive slower and more carefully?
Well, you would think that if that's what the purpose of policing is, that
that's
this
like he was
would
helping
be a good thing. Yeah. So, but because you and I and a lot of the members of your listening audience realizes that a lot of these rules, both local and state rules, are nothing more than revenue generators. That's their only purpose. They may say they're protecting the public interest, but that's simply bullshit.
Yep.
They're interested in generated money, and that's what it is.
No, it definitely is. So, yeah, I got at least two, if not three, depending on time restraints, stories that are very similar to the big government control here. Paul, if you can stick with us, we're going to go to our bottom of the hour break. And folks, if you do want to call in, as Paul did again, feel free to press that one key if you want to get on the airwaves. And Paul, I'll put you on the spot. Remind me of the local number that people can also call into.
You know, you put me on the spot because I don't have that one memorized.
I don't have it in front of me.
On the national number. I think it's
502-805-0335. Yeah, that's what I had. I had you on the air. I better mention that number. Sorry to put you on the spot there. But otherwise, folks, 858-683-1326. You are listening to the TNT Radio Show on the My View Matters Radio Network. And we will get to the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back here on the TNT radio show on the My View Matters radio network, and I believe that our good friend Paul hung on during a break there. Paul, are you still with us?
I did. Hey, listen, I want to give you a quick update. I had one more story related to this drone thing, and I think this will put your mind at ease and in the minds of everyone who's listening at ease. This
All
is
right.
a story dated today. Dated today.
All right.
Says the FAA is no longer expected or being expected to issue final rules and allow flights of drones. Okay? they are not going to issue any rules this year to allow unmanned aircraft flights in the United States. Okay?
Nice.
Isn't that good? And
because
they
it makes
say
me feel warmer and safer and I'll sleep better at night.
It says here that the technology is too unreliable at the moment. It's too immature. Okay, but the chief of the FAA, in written testimony to the panel, says that they're planning on seeking public comment on the rules, which for these drones, which, quote, could be deployed to inspect structures, keep track of animals or crops,
Okay.
utility lines, and more. Now,
and more.
You know, the North Dakota incident happened 3 years ago,
yep.
and yet the FAA, out of the other side of the government's mouth, is saying, we're not ready to allow drones on over American soil. I find a terrible disconnect.
Well, and the news arrived to us at the speed of government 3 years later, Paul. So
that has to be the explanation.
That's the speed of government. But since you're talking about them and all these extra jobs and all these extra tasks that they're taking on to keep us safe, it kind of leads me into the next story I was wanting to get you to comment on. And I don't know if you read this story, but this came out just yesterday. And that is a story about the U.S. Postal Service. Do you remember, Paul, we talked about for months now all the different stories about the U.S. government and different departments of the government all of a sudden mysteriously buying up all these ammunition supplies? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The U.S. Postal Service is currently seeking companies that can provide, quote, assorted small arms ammunition. On January 31st, the USPS Supplies and Services Purchasing Office had posted a notice. This is going back again. I'm going to guess I'm a few days late on this. But no, because that would have been after last week's show, so it's the first time we got to comment on it. So this is last week that they posted on a federal business website asking contractors to register with them in order to sell them ammunition in a variety of cartridges. Now, how does that make you feel, Paul?
Well, to me, this sounds like just another another diversion by President Mulatto as far as how he can find yet another way to take product off the market that would otherwise be available to law-abiding citizens. And
well,
by the way,
notice, here's what's funny. the notice gave a deadline of this coming Monday for companies to contact them. So I'm guessing there are a lot of good jackbooted thuggery companies that want to help their government. They're stepping up. Might be good old good American companies helping their government who are going to provide them with all this ammunition. But do you think that there's any coincidence or is there some connection with the fact that they published this notice 2 days after our own U.S. Senator Rand Paul announced his proposal that would remove the federal gun ban inside post offices?
No, I don't think that that is coincidence at all. I think this is the machine definitely trying to keep us at bay. I do.
As we said, this isn't the first non-law enforcement agency seeking firearms, but they're not even supposed to be government. Anytime we call them government, they get their panties up their ass and they say, oh, they're not government. They're the pseudo-capitalistic, pseudo-government organization. They're hemorrhaging billions of dollars. And like I said, it's not the first non-law enforcement agency that has been seeking out firearms and ammo. If we go back in time, we saw the Department of Education, because God knows when I think about education, I think about bullets and firearms. The Department of Education has been building a massive arsenal through purchases by the ATF. The Education Department has spent over $80,000 thus far on Glock pistols and $17,000 on Remington shotguns. But if we suggest that teachers arm themselves, they throw a fit. So why is the education spending all this money on guns, Paul?
Well, it's again, part of a pattern. It's just part of a pattern of President Mulatto and his and all his cronies. They simply things that keeps us busy. And then they go do what they want to do. Again, everything about the Obama administration from day one, everything has reeked of deception and lies. And that's why I've reverted to calling him President Mulatto, because that is a technically correct term. It's technically
correct. It is.
Correct.
I mean, we know that Bill Clinton was the first black president. So,
yeah.
I mean, there is a
pattern,
there's a pattern where we're talking to Paul Hologram, Stop Invisible Taxes. There's a pattern of this because back in July, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration purchased 72,000 rounds of Smith & Wesson .40 following a 2012 purchase of 46,000 rounds of .40, jacked hollow point by the National Weather Service. Tell me what in the hell the National Weather Service need 46,000 rounds of ammo for. I don't think it's taking on Punxsutawney Phil.
No, it goes back to what I just mentioned. They need to deny the regular American citizen the opportunity to purchase ammunition. That's all this is. Since they haven't been able, either through the pen, as President Mulatto likes to say, he hasn't been able to executive order the discontinuance of the manufacturing of ammunition, the next best thing is to take taxpayers' money and buy this ammunition and hoard it for whatever reason, whether he's got something nefarious in mind or not. The fact is it's denying the marketplace the opportunity to sell ammunition to a large number of American citizens who have the right.
They must be worried about these revolutions that you've been talking about, Paul. They must have been listening to you. The NSA must be giving them the Paul Hologer files when you keep talking about this revolution that might come about.
Well, when people have a lot of power, and we've seen this with Saddam Hussein, we've seen this more recently with this Kim Jong-il guy over in North Korea, Dennis Rodman's bud, and the whole history of people who aspire to rule with an iron fist is that paranoid. They are paranoid. They're scared to death that somebody's going to do to them what they've been doing to everybody else.
And so
they think that simply taking away the weaponry, or they think by jailing someone, or they think by silencing someone, that is going to solve their paranoia. What it actually does, it actually creates more paranoia because it pisses more people off, which is, again, will increase the likelihood of what they fear the most, overthrow, is likely to happen. And Obama is no different than that. He's no different. Obama
never
had any seasoning. Dale, he didn't have any seasoning to take on a job of the scale that the President of the United States has. George the Shrub at least was governor of Texas, for God's sakes. Jimmy Carter, Mr. Peanut Man, he was governor of Georgia. Ronald Reagan, governor of California. Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
All of these people, all of the predecessors, had
businessmen. George W. Bush proved he could run a baseball team into the ground with about as little common sense as a monkey. But they were at least running businesses. And again, like you said, there's a pattern of this behavior. And I'm trying to rack my brain to remember. Didn't we recently have this next piece that goes along with this? The Department of Homeland Security is spending up to $58 million on security for only two Social Security buildings in Baltimore. Only two buildings. Didn't we just recently have some shootings in Baltimore?
I don't recall Baltimore.
I'm trying to remember what happened in Baltimore. If it was, I'm sure they would accuse it of being terrorism. But again, according to this announcement, another one of these announcements on the Federal Business Opportunities website, DHS awarded this Paragon Systems, Inc., a contract not to exceed $58 million to provide security officer services for the Wabash Street and Metro West locations of the Social Security Administration in Baltimore. I mean, these are huge red flags. Yeah. Spending $58 million to protect two Social Security offices, Paul?
Well, maybe these are just covers, Dale. You know, this administration has excelled in one thing, and that is paying back political supporters with do-nothing government contracts. If anyone doubts that, just remember the phrase healthcare.gov and the debacle that thing turned out to be, simply because political friends of the Obamas, Canadian political friends, I might add, got these hundreds of millions of dollars, and they screwed that up. They had three years to get it right. So the Social Security building thing in Baltimore, it's just more political payback for the friends of Obama, FOB, friends of
Obama.
Well,
and Paul, I have to say this, to play devil's advocate, Obama by no means has a monopoly on presidents and government contract corruption. He just is the latest and greatest. He's the latest version. I mean, this is why you and I talked about this back about a month ago, and I've talked to a couple other people, and I keep asking them, do you really think that we would have been better off under Big Love Mitt Romney? Because, again, I don't have to remind you of Halliburton and all the corruption that went on with Dick Cheney. I call him Dick for a reason, Cheney, and George W. Bush. So this contracting trend goes way back. I mean, I just don't want to give W a pass. I don't think you're doing that, right?
Oh, heavens no, because, in fact, the reason Obama is in is primarily because of W.
Yep.
W's ineptitude and him playing his role in the New World Order, which a lot of people forget, old W was the guy that actually spoke the words that he was guiding the ship of state into this New World Order mindset.
Now, you're talking about George Herbert Walker Bush or George W. Bush?
The Shrub, George the Shrub,
George, his Daddy Bush, gave the famous speech on September 11th, 1991. Ironic, isn't it? I'm sure that's just a coincidence. That was on September 11th, 1991, where he said we're going to go into a New World Order.
So they're doing what they're doing out in the open. It's just unfortunate that so many people are in denial over these things. It really
You're right. We're going to jump to I got one more story. Maybe I'll get to a second one. But I thought this was interesting because this is another one of those things they call us conspiracy nuts and wackos when we talk about this. But now the quote-unquote conservative guy in the black muumuu is talking about it. And what I'm talking about is the concentration camps that are coming. Because every time you say that, people on the neocon side or on the leftist side call us crazy nuts. So if we talk about concentration camps or internments, but did you read the comments this week from Justice Antonin Scalia? You hear about these comments about? No, you didn't hear this.
No, I don't know if this is related, but I got an email from a friend today talking. The title of the email poses a question. It says, FEMA plans for massive depopulation. I haven't read the story yet.
Well, the story that I'm reading
from. Is that related to that?
Yes and no. I mean, the Washington Examiner was talking about this on Tuesday, where Justice Scalia, famous of the Supreme Court white moo-moos, he gave a speech to the University of Hawaii Law School. And, of course, they know a little bit about internment camps in Hawaii. And he told the University of Hawaii Law School, while discussing the Korematu versus United States case, let me find a quote here, but he basically was saying that he could see concentration camps happening in the United States again. This guy is one of the nine Supremes. He wears the big extra-large black muumuu, Paul, and he's talking about internment camps. Should we be a little concerned?
Well, have they laid out any criteria as to who's going to be rounded up?
Well, I'm sure there's no criteria, and that's what our good friend Frank Harris, who comes on the show from time to time, was saying that on the social networks. He said, what are they going to do, put us in camps this time for having opinions, not liking government, not handing over enough money? And I said, well, it's going to be all of the above, Frank. But no, I mean, they haven't laid anything out. But we can go all the way back to when Jesse Ventura did his conspiracy theory show before the network buried it and just wouldn't let him run the episodes about the concentration camps. You know, he did an episode on that 2.5 years ago, and they literally removed the episode from all the DVRs because they had the ability to do that, because he was talking about where their locations are going to be at with these camps. He showed everybody the giant coffins that were stacked up outside these camps. He showed everybody the barbed wire. And then you have Justice Antonin Scalia, who is one of the Supreme Court, saying that he could see World War II-style internment camps happening again.
Just in case there's anyone in your audience that doesn't remember that the United States uses internment camps as a matter of policy, you mentioned World War II ones. Those were aimed at Japanese and Japanese Americans.
Japanese Americans,
in addition
though,
to that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And in addition to being aimed at that particular ethnic group, they also confiscated a lot of personal property owned by these same Americans. And this was all done in the name of national security. Oh, wait a minute. That's right. We now have a Homeland Security Agency to take care
That's
of
right.
that now.
Motherland.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Homeland. Yeah.
So Jesse's
said,
wrong?
Quote,
I don't think so.
Antonin Scalia said, quote, you are kidding yourself if you think it won't happen again. This is a Supreme Court justice saying this. But we're wackos and extremists and conspiracy theorists that we talk about it, Paul.
Because somebody says something and it is later derided as being conspiracy, it doesn't make it not so.
No.
Again, we have a massive media with massive amounts of power, and they can shape public opinion fairly easily. And unfortunately, a large number of people will accept what's being said without question. So that's why folks listen to your show, Dale.
Well, we definitely appreciate you saying that, Paul. Again, we wanted to tie
your folks think with their brain and then do independent research if they have any doubts, and then they determine on their own what they want to determine and how it fits. They determine the truth, and that's why they listen here.
Well, they're not mind-numb robots, and that's the thing. They're not just calling into some Neo show and saying ditto, mega ditto, and all that crap. And this is the thing, folks. I keep talking about if Obama had not been elected, if Big Love Mitt Romney had been elected, what would have happened? Because when Obama got elected, all of a sudden the chickens came home to roost, so to speak, with the neoconservatives. Because remember, the conservatives made this big sordid nest for us after the 9/11 attacks. And it was after those attacks that conservatives quivering and quaking in their shoes over the thought of the terrorists coming to get us, as I thought it was okay to trade away the freedoms of the American people to the federal government in the hope of gaining safety and security from the terrorists. And what were the terms of that fateful trade? They surrendered to President Bush their omnipotent powers, powers that are inherent to any totalitarian regime, and are anti-ethical and are antithetical to the principles of freedom. And you look at things like the power to take people into military custody as suspected terrorists, holding them as long as the military wants, to spy on people, delve into the telephone records, the power to assassinate people, including American citizens. There is no way to reconcile these powers within the principles of a free society. They are inherent to totalitarian regimes. And we keep telling you this stuff, and it doesn't make us conspiracy theorists, because they're precisely the exact powers that our ancestors kept warning us that they were going to come for. They don't create a new reality. These false realities are delusions. The people who live under any of these regimes that wield these types of powers are not a free people, pure and simple. But all these conservatives thought it was a good trade because their man W was the president. Well, screw that crap. He's a compassionate conservative, they cried. I cried bullshit. He's a neocon asshole. And he couldn't be trusted with these powers. He'll take care of us. And he'll keep us safe from the terrorists. Bullshit again, I cry. And those of us who are libertarian, small L libertarian, kept emphasizing, don't relinquish these powers to anyone. Imagine a person who you would consider your worst nightmare being elected president, would you want him or her to wield these powers. Don't throw away these freedoms. We know that no matter how afraid you are and how much you trust you have in these presidents, don't listen. Don't listen to the government powers. You got to stand up to them. You got to be willing to fight your own right and in the end say death to the New World Order.
Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.